You're now back on the record. I'll turn it over to the respondents to confirm their case.
Thank you. Okay. So is it okay if I, this procedure is a little different than regular court, if I like make a brief opening and then question my witness, and then at the end I would do kind of like a closing?
Sure.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so good afternoon. Attorney Lauren Gambardella. I'm general counsel for Blue Hills Civic Association. So Blue Hills received Ms. Thomas's FOI request on May 6, 2025. To the best of our knowledge, before this, Blue Hills had never received an FOI request. So upon receiving it, Dr. Reed, who's here with me today, the president of Blue Hills Civic Association, who's also going to testify as a witness, forwarded that request to me so that my office could handle the request. So on May 8th, we promptly acknowledged Ms. Thomas's request, just explaining that we had received her request, that but because Blue Hills is not a public agency, it's not subject to 1-200 of the Freedom of Information Act. And then on May 9th, Ms. Thomas promptly replied, explaining that she believed that Blue Hills is functional equivalent, so falling under 1B of 1-200's definition of public agency. She believes they're a functional, Blue Hills is a functional equivalent of a government agency. In that response, which is in something that's exhibit B, she explained that the only reasoning she provided for why she believes that Blue Hills is a functional equivalent is that they receive a large amount of government funding. I responded the same day, just explaining that based on the well-litigated four-factor test, while it may be true that under the second prong, Blue Hills does receive a significant amount of government funding, that Blue Hills does not meet any of the other factors and therefore fails the test. And in that response, I provided cites to court cases and Freedom of Information Act Commission along with that response. So, moving into the four-factor test. So in the Supreme Court in Woodstock Academy versus FOIC in 1980 established a four-factor test for determining if a determining if an entity can be considered the functional equivalency of a public agency and therefore would be subject to the Connecticut FOIA. These four factors are: one, whether the entity performs a governmental function; two, the level of government funding; three, the extent of government involvement or regulation; and four, whether the entity was created by the government. Since receiving notice of Ms. Thomas's filing of a complaint with the FOIC, I've conducted further research on behalf of my client and have found even more evidence that the test, that Blue Hills does not meet the requirements of the test and therefore is not the functional equivalent of a public agency. So at this time, I'm going to ask Dr. Reed, who's already sworn in, some questions, and then I'm going to use that information to demonstrate why Blue Hills does not fails at least three of the four prongs.
So I imagine you're going to ask your witness questions, and then we'll have cross-examination, and then that'll be the basis for your closing statement. Is that
right? Sure. Yes. Okay. Thank you. Okay. Dr. Reed, what is your position with Blue Hills Civic Association?
Currently a volunteer president or board chair of the organization.
So you're a volunteer, but you are the president of Blue Hills Civic. Okay. How long have you served in this role?
Since August or September of 2024.
Are you an elected government official or employee of any government?
No.
Have you ever been an elected official or government employee?
No.
What type of corporation is Blue Hills Civic Association?
It's a private nonprofit 503 organization.
Okay. And so for what purposes was Blue Hills Civic Association organized and incorporated?
So we provide services to the community around youth and elderly.
And I would just like to point to, I'm looking at, just for the commission's, number two, our respondents, exhibit number two, is the charter, so, I mean, sorry, the certificate of incorporation of the company. And number three is the amendment, both of which have the original purpose, which Dr. Reed was just speaking to, and then the amended purpose, which are very similar, but the second one's just giving a little bit more detail. The purpose of the organization is on the first page of exhibit two, paragraph three. And then on the amendment, so the original certificate of incorporation was 1963, and the amendment was done in 1968. On the second page of the document, paragraph three, is just amending the certificate of incorporation with a little bit of a more detailed purpose for the organization, but both are just affirming the shorter, simpler response that, Dr. Reed just provided. So what are some, Dr. Reed, what are some of the main, like, I know that was the purpose, community, activism, youth, but what are some of the specific programs that Blue Hills ran in the past?
Right. So one is a summer youth employment. Two are youth program in a local high school. Also offer...
Sorry, what program in local high school?
Youth
programs.
Youth program. Also provide service to elderly in the north end part of Hartford. Advocacy around gun violence. I mean, in a nutshell, the organization provide services in the neighborhood across the generation or across the lifespan.
So what type of body or group has the, like, has the authority over Blue Hills? Like, what, who makes the decisions for Blue Hills Civic Association?
The board. Okay. The board of directors.
Board of directors. Okay. How many directors are there currently?
Five of us.
Okay. And are those same five the same persons that were on the board of directors at the time relevant to the documents in Ms. Thomas's FOI request?
That's correct. Yes.
Okay. How many of these directors, if any, are government officials or employees?
Just one of the four, one of the five.
Okay. So one of the five is...
I'm sorry, it's four of us. My apology. It's four of us.
Okay. So there's four.
Four of us.
Correcting that. So there's four on the board of directors. And one of those persons is, you said, either a government official or an employee?
Yes.
Okay. Who is it and what is their role?
Josh Hall, mm-hmm. Representative Josh Hall. So he's a state representative for the Hartford area.
Okay. Does Mr. Hall have any power on his own to bind the Blue Hills Civic Association Board of Directors to any decisions independently?
No.
Okay. Are any of the other board of directors, including yourself, an employee or a public government employer or a public official?
No.
Okay. And also, is there, who runs the day-to-day operations? So, like, on the ground, helping organize the programming, implementing the programming, who runs those operations?
That would be the executive directors and the managers under her.
Okay. Who was the most recent executive director of Blue Hills Civic Association?
So Vicki Gallen Clark was, and eventually we had an interim director, which is Brian Matthews.
Okay. Were either of those persons government employees, to your knowledge, at the time that they were in their roles?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Were either of those persons government or public officials?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And you said that the executive director is the one overseeing the day-to-day and implementing it with the staff underneath them?
That's correct.
Okay. At the time that it was operating, because right now we know, you know, based on what's already in the news, right now it's pretty much a dormant organization. But when it was operating, if you had to ballpark it, how many employees did Blue Hills Civic Association have?
I don't know the exact number. I can only tell you at the executive level, roughly how many persons. So you had the CFO, the ED, and then you have some managers. 1, 2, 3, probably like 4 additional. So probably 6 managerial under the executive directors.
Okay.
And so I don't know how many in terms of line staff or entry-level staff. I don't know that number.
Right. But there were about six managerial staff.
Six.
Okay. Were any of those persons government employees or public officials at the time that they were in those roles?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. And also Blue Hills had a number of just staff to run their programming, their youth programming, their senior, you know, going to the senior center. Those were, there was employees of Blue Hills that were doing that work.
To our knowledge as a board, yes.
And so those were not government employees. Those were Blue Hills employees that were running the day-to-day of the operations.
That's correct.
Okay. And was Blue... So we heard, you know, a lot of testimony about, you know, the number of... from Ms. Thomas, the amount of government funding and such. To your knowledge, so Blue Hills was incorporated in 1963. Historically, where has most of the funding that Blue Hills has received over the years come from? Has it come from the government? Has it come from or non-government entities?
To our knowledge as a board, or my knowledge given the time that I serve, that some were governmental, some were non-governmental. It was mostly non-governmental, to my knowledge.
And then in the last few years, there's been more of the government funding.
That's correct.
And that funding has come through grants from the state.
That's correct.
Okay. Approximately, you know, as of like last year, because we heard a lot about, you know, the amount of funding from the state, how much of that, of the funding for Blue Hills was still from non-government entities? About approximately how much?
I mean, and this isn't definitive, but roughly non-governmental.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say probably 30%, given what I've seen. I would say around 30%.
And when you say
what was the time period for the 30% that you're saying?
Last operating year.
Last operating year.
Yeah. So about 30% was non-government funds.
That's correct.
And when you say, like, from your knowledge, because I know you're on the board of directors, so you're not part of the day-to-day, so how did you get the information? Like, how was the board of directors, including yourself, presented information about the budget and how much money Blue Hills was getting, where it was coming from? How did you, like, where's your knowledge coming from generally?
Most of the time during our board meeting, and we meet every other month. So that's how we were privy to it. And also, when I assumed the role as the chair, I asked or requested to have the financial statement presented at least 3 weeks before so I could review it. But that only happened once during the time that I was chair.
So while you're not part of the day-to-day, you were provided, you know, you saw records that were provided during the board meetings by executive director.
Right. Yes.
Okay. And, to the best of your knowledge, how was Blue Hills, you know, it was created in 1963. How was it created? Was it created by a government or a state charter, or was it created by private individuals?
Yeah, it's a grassroots, so it's community-driven, so it's non-governmental, community member come together and see a need and start from there. So to become a civic association.
Okay. I'm just trying to speak up.
Oh, sorry. It's community-driven. And so the community saw a need to provide service, and eventually they did and established a civic organization or association.
So it was not created by a government, state government, local government?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
Now going directly to, as is, can be seen in complainant's Exhibit B, which shows her request that's the heart of this matter. And as was noted by Mr. Hyde, the documents being requested, the majority of them have to do with the grant from DECD, so the Department of Economic and Community Development, which is the state of Connecticut, and the cyber fraud involved in that, with that grant. So I'm going to ask specifically a question about that grant. How much was the DECD grant for?
$5.5 million.
Okay. And how much of that, of those funds, went directly to Blue Hill Civic?
1.1.
So the rest of the funds, which is the majority of the grant, where did that money, like, how was that money used? And explain that part.
So funding allocation outside of my scope, how the funding came about or how much amount though each organization in the community would receive. So Blue Hills was serving as a fiduciary to dispense the amount that was allocated to community-based organization around the greater Hartford area.
So the whole amount went to you, went to Blue Hills to then disperse it throughout the community to various other entities?
Right. So only of that 5.1, only 1.1 was allocated to Blue Hills as administrative fees to get those funds out to community-based organization.
Sorry, can I just ask a follow-up? Was the did Blue Hills get to decide who the recipients of the other money was, or would that come from a DECD or a contract or anything like that?
I am not privy to how that came about, honestly, but I know of that only 1.1 was administered fee for the organization. But I don't know how they came about, how that.
So you know how it was decided where that other 4. Whatever went?
Well, we know that it went to community-based organization, but how it was
chosen,
I don't. That I'm not privy to. I really don't know.
Okay.
But I think it's a confusion of like the question, because we've discussed and I helped them deal with the DECD issue, which is all in the news and which is the heart of her FOI request. What happens is Blue Hills submitted an application to the DECD asking for, you know, for the grant. And in that application, they have to put down the entities that they're going to be the pass through like the different community organizations.
So they're already identified when that money comes in.
Correct.
Yes.
So
the application
you apply and then you receive the grant, and this would all be a matter, you know, you could request this from the DECD. They would provide like the grant contract, but you submit like Blue Hills was responsible for submitting an application, and in there they put, you know, who they would be the fiduciaries for the state.
Yeah.
The different organizations are listed, and then when you receive the grant contract, you're obligated to follow what you put in your application. And what she's saying about the 1.1 is that is the amount that Blue Hills gets for their services. For
I object. She's testifying. She's not under oath, and I don't believe what she's testifying is accurate.
Why is that? I mean, I'm taking this as a representation by the attorney on behalf of her client about how it works, but why don't you think that's accurate?
The records that I've received that I've not entered into here does not spell out who the subgrantees are that they were dispersing the money to.
Do you have the application?
I do. I can provide that after.
And you're saying the application does not say who that money goes to?
Does not say.
Yeah. I'd like to see it to know if that is what I'm talking about or not.
Sure.
If she'd like to show.
Absolutely. I can send it.
Can you? Yeah. Can you send that? I'll take that as an exhibit, a posterior exhibit. All right, so regardless, Blue Hills got 5.5 million to when 1.1 they could keep for the services and rest they were required to give out.
It's a pass.
Program format. Okay.
Is she gonna, am I gonna get to see?
I'm not gonna read that right now.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna want that after the hearing.
Oh, okay.
And go from there.
Got it. Okay. In terms of the 1.1, so in terms of what Blue Hills does to administer, like what are some of the functions it provides in receiving that 1.1? What are some of the things it has to do to, you know, funnel the money out to the different organizations based on the, like, as a recipient of the grant?
Right. I don't have the answer to that. As noted, I, as a board, are far removed from the day-to-day operation. All I remember, as I noted, when I assumed the position, the grant was already in full effect. 1.1 were unrestricted, so that could go to service, that could go to employment salary, so I couldn't really definitively tell you what specifically that 1.1 was spent for because it was unrestricted.
Okay. So unrestricted?
Unrestricted. The 1.1 was unrestricted funds.
And to the best of your knowledge, because so in terms of getting information about how the organizations were running, how were you getting that information? Was it through just board meetings? Were you meeting with anybody like on the ground when you were in your role? How were you getting information about how the programming were running, or how were you being updated as the president?
So as a board, we have the ED would present the, she'll have a report and give us, and then we'll have different sub leaders come in and talk about their current program. And also I had requested that she and I would meet once every 2 weeks to kind of give me an overview of what's going on.
And who did you say was that? What was the name of the person?
The prior executive director, Vicki Gellin-Clark.
And in her conversation with you, did she ever mention any times that like a government official was coming and like observing programming, or they were coming in and, you know, controlling how the program was going?
No.
Thank you. No further questions.
Okay, I'll turn to you, Ms. Rick Thomas, for cross-examination.
Sure. You mentioned that the $5.1 million grant from DECD, how it was chosen, where everything but the 1.1 million would go, that you're not familiar with where it would go. Do you remember receiving a timeline from your attorney that she submitted to the State Department of Economic and Community Development on this wire fraud that you suspect?
Objection.
What's the objection?
Outside the scope of my direct. And it's referenced.
You did ask about the wire fraud that was part of it. What's the purpose of the timeline?
It shows in there who decided where the money was going.
Well, that certainly seems relevant to me, so I'm going to overrule the objection. What, can you answer the question?
Sorry, which timeline are you referring to?
DECD requested a timeline from your attorney and Blue Hill Civic Association when it was discovered that money had gone missing.
Okay.
And in that timeline, it was submitted to the Department of Economic and Community Development. That's the only timeline I'm aware of. It was supposed to be the internal audit that you all did. And it's my understanding it was submitted to the board as well.
Okay. So I think if I'm hearing you correctly, the timeline that the board was informed of the incident, that's the only timeline I can really talk about right now. I'm not sure what other timeline you would be talking about, because once the board was informed, which was significantly after the fraud, that's when our timeline started, because we had no knowledge, and that was in March.
Did you, so I do want to ask about that, but Did your board receive from your attorney a rundown of the events that happened surrounding the missing money?
Objection. Even if that did happen, that would be attorney-client privilege communication. So I wouldn't advise my client to be discussing it, because anything I was speaking to the board about would have been attorney-client privilege if I was advising them about this issue.
It wasn't advice. It was submitted to the Department of Economic and Community Development as a promised audit of what happened, internal audit of what happened.
This was a record that was provided to DECD.
That is how I received a copy of it. I'm happy to share it. I didn't realize it would be relevant to this conversation until she raised it.
I mean, were you the attorney at the time that
yes.
Did you submit this document to DECD?
So what is, I don't really get what she's trying to, what is the question again?
She's asking about a timeline, I guess.
A rundown of events that happened. You can call it a timeline. It was spelled out by dates.
And in that, it shows how the decisions were made as to which entities received the funding, is my
correct.
Is what I'm
yes.
getting at?
Yep.
I would need to see that document because, as noted, as a board, our timeline started in March.
Right.
Sure. I would need to see that.
Sure. Is it okay if I submit that after the hearing?
Yes.
Okay. In that timeline, it specifically spells out that Vicki Gallen-Clark, the executive director at the time, and State Senator Doug McCrory had a meeting one-on-one and decided where every single state dollar of that grant would go.
Like I said, I would need to see the documents.
Okay. Are you aware of Senator McCrory being involved in the decisions of where money from Blue Hills Civic Association would go?
When you say aware before we as a board were aware of the audit, or?
Before, after, at any point, are you aware of Senator McCrory's involvement in directing where specific state money would go, or Blue Hill Civic money would go?
I can say it's a direction. I know they had conversation.
Okay. Yes. A conversation with what is that?
I wouldn't be able to see the document because I am not sure, but I know there was some conversation around them having a conversation.
Separate from the document itself, are you aware of Senator McCrory ever being personally involved in deciding where Blue Hill Civic Association's allocations would go?
No.
You are not aware. Have you ever asked that question?
No.
Have you ever been told that that's a problem at your organization?
It's after all of this, I become aware to the board the involvement of all those players or stakeholders.
And you not prodded further whether or not a state senator was deciding where your organization was sending money?
As noted, we as a board were not aware of all of that until we start uncovering these documents because they were requested by us.
And then you discovered that he was involved in directing.
Couldn't tell you that he was involved in directing. Like I said, I saw that there was some form of communication. What that entail, I can't tell you what that is. And anything that was outside of my scope of understanding, I've always sought counseling, or the board sought counseling.
I would just like to note that it's kind of hard to ask someone who is kind of far removed from the day-to-day, no offense, but Vicki Gallen-Clark would be the more appropriate person to be asking these questions of what role a government official. He's the chair of powerful appropriations committee, a subcommittee that directly determines money going to this organization. And she would be probably the best person, or
she doesn't work for the organization anymore. We have no power over her. So even if I wanted to bring her, I could not. So that's why she isn't here.
Is she still in the Hartford area?
We have no idea. She, as soon as, you know, this came out, there were decisions that had to be made, because obviously the organization has been grappling with the fallout of what occurred. That's all in the news and everything. But she is not, and she has long since not been an employee of Blue Hill Civic Association.
Yeah. But the complainant's point is well taken that, I mean, you're sitting here telling me that this is not a functional equivalent, here's the reasons why, but then you don't have answers as to some of the day-to-day operations that could establish whether or not it actually is a functional equivalent. And that is problematic, I think, for me. Do you have a significant additional cross-examination at this time?
I don't. Maybe like 2 or 3 more questions, and I promise it won't take that much time.
Okay, no, that's fine. Because we're up. We're done with the 4 o'clock time period. But if you don't have much more, we can continue. I'm probably going to continue this matter regardless as I try to figure out how I want to pursue this. But that's fine. But you can continue the cross examination, and I'll try and figure this out.
Okay. The remaining two sort of significant questions that I have is, when your organization lost or was told by the state to return all state funding, and that existing funding promises were being severed from the state. How did that impact your organization? Did you eliminate nearly all your staff?
I wouldn't use the word eliminate. We were put in a very particular situation where we had to make a tough decision to lay off some of the staff. The primary reason for us as a board, once we started learning more about the details of the finances, we as a board couldn't disaggregate the funds. The funds were commingled. So we couldn't decide, DC said freeze all the funding. And we as a board, which is, we're not in the day-to-day operation, couldn't decide what amount of fund was allocated to one organization. And so as a result of that, because of the amount that we needed to return, and we didn't have the fund to continue with the staff, we had to make a very tough decision and proceed with that as a board.
Was 2023 the most recent tax filing that you've turned in? You mentioned the 30% of non-government funding coming from non-government. Can you give a few examples of what those type of non-government entities are?
The Hartford Foundation of Public Giving is one of them. That's like a most prominent one I could think of, and that was a good chunk of.
Was one of those Capital Workforce Partners?
I honestly can't say.
I would point you to the tax records. It shows in Schedule I that Capital Workforce Partners is a major funder in that year and significant previous years. That is government funding as well. If you look at their tax records, I'm happy to submit those records as well. And that's for workforce employment or summer youth employment, I believe. And then my last question is, your board was telling you it was about 30% is non-government. How long did it take your board to tell you that there was a significant amount of money missing from your
objections?
I don't know how that's relevant, showing that the board didn't keep her in the loop on their day-to-day operations, as well as give her an accurate representation of the current status of their finances.
And that's relevant to show
that I questioning that 30% of their funding is coming from non-government.
Understood. I'm going to overrule the objection. I think that's fair game.
When you say board, what do you mean? I'm not
sure. So how long after the wire fraud took place did your executive director or anyone from staff inform the board of directors that there was a problem?
So we were informed March 17 or somewhere right before our board meeting.
When was the wire fraud?
From my question, they were notifying December. And the board was notifying March. And that's when the board timeline started.
That's all the questions I have for now. I want to be mindful of your time.
All right, thank you. All right. Do you have any redirect for your witness at this time? Let me say this. I'm going to continue the matter. I think that there's additional issues we need to explore, as well as the additional exhibits that the complainant is going to provide. So there may be additional questions you have about those, or that I do. And so if you want to save your redirect for when we come back and bring this witness back, you can do that.
Yes.
I'm also considering what additional witnesses we might need in order to get to the bottom to some of these questions surrounding the functional equivalency. So if you wanted to hold off, I guess that's what I'm saying, you can do that.
And I'd also, I mean, I don't know do you guys have, like, does the commission have subpoena power?
We do. Okay. We don't use it very often, but we do have it.
I was just curious because while for obvious reasons Ms. Clark may not, I don't know if, I mean, I guess if you use the subpoena power, she would, but Mr. Matthews was the most recent executive director and believed that he would be more willing to speak to the commission, I would think, based on what I know. Just as a helpful, I understand that you guys have the power, so you do whatever you feel is right. I was just trying to help.
Okay. What was his time frame for being the interim?
So he was, when was he hired as the interim? And he also worked at Blue Hills before
that.
While he wasn't, it's not like he just came in random, like he was part of the organization for a long time and then was elevated to interim after Ms. Gallen Clark was there. About how many years has it been?
No, I don't. He was there relatively. He only spent 9 years. Honestly, he was just the most suitable.
9 years?
No. It wasn't years. It was months.
Oh, before he was?
Yeah.
Okay. So she was prior to that.
Yeah, so.
What was her first name? Vicky? Is that?
Vicky Gallen Clark. So as much as we would want Brian, he would give it to Brian.
Okay. All right. So I'm gonna continue the hearing. We don't have a lot of time. It expires in May, so I'm gonna try and get something as soon as possible. If there are dates that you are unavailable in the next couple of months, you should let our office know that so that we can try and schedule for a time when everyone can be here. And I'm gonna try and figure out what to do with Ms. Gallen Clark and additional exhibits we may need, additional testimony we may need, and we'll go from there, okay?
Can I just make sure that I have all the additional exhibits that I promised?
Yes.
I have the contract for the $5.5 million. I have the Excel link to the rundown of funding, and then the timeline that I asked questions about, the internal audit that was done that was provided to DECD.
You already have a copy of it?
I already have a copy of it.
Yes. Again, if you have additional...
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
I thought also, in addition to that, the contract that you said you have, do you have the application? Because that's the part that I was referencing before.
Sure, I have the application.
All right. Okay.
Oh, and is it before, to be frank, my wedding is in May, and so did you mean before May?
Congratulations. Yes.
Oh, thank you.
So this matter expires May 14th. So that
expires,
means...
Expires, what is that?
That is our statutory deadline for when a final decision has to be rendered. So that means that we've got to get all of the evidence, and I have to write a proposed final decision, and then it has to go to our full commission, and the full commission has to vote on it before May 14th of 2026.
Okay.
So we have a very tight deadline here. And so that's why I'm hoping we can get this back on the books quickly. And then, do my best to get it finished.
If I have other, so I assume because it's continued, if there's another person from the organization that's worked there a long time that I wanted to bring in to testify about the day-to-day.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Any witnesses that you think would be helpful to answer some of these questions, you are more than free to bring them on. All right, good.
And in terms of the things she mentioned, am I going to get those before the next time? Like, so I can see.
Yeah, I didn't put a date specific on when I wanted those, because I was originally thinking that it would be a post-hearing exhibit and then I would do that. Do you have any objection to getting them sooner than
I think by Monday. I'll get them at the end of Monday.
That's perfectly fine. We're not going to be here before Monday.
Yeah, I'll send them by Monday.
Okay. Okay, with that, I'm going to end the hearing today. 4:18. Thank you all very much. Have a nice day.
Thank you.